Hello and welcome to the Travel Royally Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Royal Links Golf Tours. If you're ready to start planning your golf vacation, please visit us at royallinksgolftours.com and reach out to our email, give us a call. We'd be happy to help. Today we have Mr. Sean Zach. Sean is finishing up his first book, Searching in St. Andrews. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Travel Royally Podcast. Today, it's a great pleasure for us to welcome to the Travel Royally Podcast, Sean Zach. And Sean lives in Chicago. He's a proud graduate of Wisconsin, and he's also a writer and multimedia journalist for Golf Magazine and Golf.com. And he also writes for his hometown magazine, I should say, Peninsula Pulse. He recently finished writing his first book, Searching in St. Andrews, and that's going to hit bookstores on April 2nd. You can pre-order that book now, just as I did. And I've reached out to Sean because I simply love his writing, and he's graciously agreed to be on the podcast. Sean, welcome to the Travel Royally Podcast.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And it's great that, you know, the more and more I talk about this book, what is lovely about it is it kind of pulls me back to that summer each time I do, right? And it's just a bunch of great memories that, like, the process of writing it was pretty lovely because every, you know, visual nature of what I'm writing was always pulling me back to that summer, and going through photos and videos of that summer made it so enjoyable, right? Writing can be a hell of a task, but when it's happy memories and enjoyable things like Scotland and St. Andrews, it was a lot easier.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I agree 100%. So let's start at the beginning. How did you come to golf in the first place?
Oh, boy. Well, I got an internship at Golf Magazine in 2013, a long time ago now, over a decade ago, and was just steadfast enough of a worker, really loved New York City, which is where the headquarters were, and was so addicted to the pace of the city and of journalism that I was like begging to get a job back with them. And they said yes at some point in 2014. I graduated from Wisconsin and then moved out to New York for 7 years, and just kind of worked my way up the ranks at the magazine and the website, and have had, I guess, gone so many different places as a result of it, right? Scotland is one of them. I've been to Scotland maybe 4 or 5 times now. And it is without a doubt the best annual trip that we get to make as a part of, like, writers and editors for the website. Is whenever the Open credentials get decided, that is the one that you really want your name down on, because as I write about in the book, like, part of being an American writer covering the Open is to bring your golf clubs with you and to play the various clubs around wherever the Open is that year. Right. This year it was in Hoylake. Later this summer it's in Troon, but that summer it was in St. Andrews, which means you're hitting up Crail and Ely and maybe jumping up to Carnoustie and doing everything that Fife has to offer.
Yeah. I was there for that tournament. And I happened to be there on Friday and got to see Tiger walk across the bridge. We were in the grandstands right behind the 18th green. I still get chills thinking about it. The crowd was unbelievable for that. Were you there for that moment?
I was off to the, what I guess would be the opposite side of one. So, you know, there's the putting warm-up green over there. That's kind of where I was watching from. Yeah. I had had lunch that afternoon out on along the 14th hole in some hospitality suite. And I was like rushing to get back there for that moment. And you're right. It was a goosebumps moment. What I thought was so cool was just how many players noticed it, that knew that it was coming, that were trying to acknowledge it themselves. I mean, you had Max Homa and Matt Fitzpatrick in the group with Tiger, who like backed up off of the tee to let him go. But then there was Tony Finau pulling his phone out on the putting green to watch. Will Zalatoris, I believe, did something similar. You had Rory and Justin Thomas walking up the first fairway at the same time, kind of just watching, because not only is he their idol, but then all these guys are fully aware of the historical significance of not just Tiger, but the old course and how those things intersect. We know that walking over the bridge is a visual moment that will be replayed by NBC and CBS and whomever for years and years to come. And so to say that you could see it with your own eyes, like you can, is something that you will continue to tell people for the rest of your life, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that well, first of all, I would say that was the second Open I've been to at St. Andrews. I don't think there's a better sporting event I've ever been to than, because you can leave and go into the town, you can go to the Dunvegan, you can, you know, and the way that the course is shaped, you can cut through the new course to different parts, kind of take shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And the hospitality that they have there is amazing. There's just nothing like it. I've got a funny story for you now that I think about it. So this was 2015. It was the Open. And a friend of mine's a member of the RNA, and I had passes into the RNA grandstand, which is right along the first tee. And I was going to go into the Dunvegan to get a beer. And I walk out, and I'm walking behind the RNA, and getting ready to go in, standing there with his hands in his pocket, is an American that every sports fan would recognize, particularly those you may not recognize. You'll recognize the name, but I don't know you would recognize his face. And it's Franco Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's standing there, and I go up to him, and I introduce myself, and he's laughing. I said, "What's so funny?" He goes, "You're the first person to recognize me." Because I'm telling you, if he walked down the street in my town, every guy over 50 would be like, you know, that's Franco Harris. And, you know, he had a sport coat and tie on, get ready to go in the RNA. That was a very cool moment to see someone who would be mobbed in the streets of the U.S., any street basically in the U.S. And here he is. No one recognized him.
But yeah, I think one thing I always like to tell people is that, you know, Jim Nance has not, as far as I know, this might not be true of like going decades back, but as far as I know, he has not been there to call the Open at St. Andrews, because it's been media rights have been owned by NBC and the Golf Channel and Sky Sports. And but Nance continues to go to the Open at St. Andrews because he is such a golf nut and such a sports nut that he knows, like, these things come around every 5 to 7, maybe 8 years, and it is such an intimate sporting event. It would be, you know, it's like going to maybe Wimbledon and seeing golfers walk around the neighborhood of Wimbledon, or tennis players walk around the neighborhood of Wimbledon, right? Like, you have Scottie Scheffler picking up a fish and chips order from one of the spots in town and then walking back to the old course hotel. You have caddies, you know, moving about. I remember very vividly running into Joaquin Niemann on the streets of St. Andrews that week, and like 2 minutes later Sepp Straka and his brother walked by. This was before Sepp Straka was a Ryder Cup member, right? And so not many people notice him. They just think he's this jolly gent who's a golf fan. But no, that's a guy who's in the field. He's got a tee time on Thursday. That is what it's like. And at the same, like 2 minutes later, Katrina Matthew, this Scottish golf legend, she's walking down the street. And it's like, I feel privileged and some imposter syndrome being here, like while these golfing greats have descended upon the place. So yeah, you're right. It's a hard ticket to get. It's a hard bedroom to get. There's only so many bedrooms in town, right?
Yeah.
And so you might have to stay in Dundee and take the bus down. But it's still worth the trip. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we had some clients over there and friends that were over there during the Dunhill Links Championship. And they got to meet Bill Murray. They stayed in the same hotel, the Old Course Hotel. Catherine Zeta-Jones, I'm trying to remember who else, but just, you know, and they've got wonderful stories about how friendly they were and how funny they were.
Yeah.
So let me ask this. I mentioned at the outset that I love your writing and, you know, which is what spurred me to get a hold of you. But when did you know you wanted to be a writer? How old were you and why did you want to become a writer?
Well, first off, thank you. I think the answer to that is probably in high school. I remember taking some, I guess, advanced like writing classes and really taking to the comfort and the confidence you need to be a writer, to write about yourself and to write about things that you believe in. And it went so well that I, you know, arrived at school in Madison, and I was like, let's give it a try. And so started writing about fantasy football and things that they would allow me to do at the school newspaper. And I guess what was really great is that there was a place for me to ply my trade as a freshman and a sophomore and a junior and a senior at this university with, you know, top level sports teams, right?
Right.
These were like the J.J. Watt and Russell Wilson football teams and the Wisconsin Final Four teams. And really just took a lot of liking to sports writing. But every summer I would go home and I would work at a golf club in Wisconsin. And so it was kind of the mixture between my interests and like what I feel like I was getting to know a lot better, which was the game of golf, and getting addicted to spending every day of the summer either working at the club or playing golf. It would probably be funny for my parents to watch because I would leave for the golf course at 5 in the morning and I would work a morning shift and then I would play 36 holes afterwards. And it was like, I've spent the entire day at this private club, making money, but also then spending my time there. And it's like, do you have any other interests? And I guess the truth was nothing had grabbed me quite like the sport of golf. And as you know, it is, I always tell people it is like, it's the perfect sport for people with like uber competitive people or people with addictive personalities that you can dive headfirst into the very tricky difficulties of a sport. And it's those difficulties that make it so fascinating to write about because, you know, it is both really frustrating for you and me, really enjoyable for you and me. And, you know, professionals feel the exact same thing. It is incredibly frustrating for Ricky Fowler, incredibly rewarding for Ricky Fowler. I just watched his upcoming like Full Swing episode and he's getting choked up in it. And it's like, gosh, I don't think I've seen Ricky Fowler get like super choked up, but it's like, that's the reward that he gets from flying his trade. And so, yeah, I think to become a golf writer, I was gripped by the addictive competitive nature of it and really enjoyed just writing about sports at large.
Well, you know, one thing that comes to mind is that writing a book is very different than being a contributing writer to Golf Magazine or golf.com or any other publication. And your day job as a writer, magazine writer, I'm assuming a lot of that's interviewing people. Who's been your best interview, your favorite interview?
Gosh, a couple years ago, we talked with Peyton Manning on a podcast that was he was just as fun as you thought he would be in terms of his kind of goofiness and nerdiness, but also like his love for the game. I think the most fun I had was probably I worked on a story about Phil Mickelson's coffee fast, essentially, in which it's a 6-day fast in which you only drink this concoction of coffee and water for 6 days, and you obviously lose weight as a result. It resets your immune system. But I performed this coffee fast that Phil had kind of designed with his coach, and I ended up texting Phil like throughout it, and this was like Thanksgiving of 2019, and I was on one hand, blown away at how nerdy Phil could get into fasting. You know, I think that is his nature, is to go all in on things. And then, like, also the fact that he was texting me during Thanksgiving, this time when everyone's kind of home with their family. But that, like I said, he goes all in on things. And then I chatted with him for about 15 minutes on the phone when the fast was done. And he showed even greater depth to interest in taking care of himself and how he was going to change his body for this late stage of his career. And like, at the time I thought he was crazy. Maybe that still suffices as a description, but then he goes and wins the 2021 PGA Championship, and you know, maybe crazy is what got him there. So,
well,
talking,
I remember
Phil
reading
that,
what you wrote, and I remember thinking you were the crazy one to try it, right? But
yeah, I think I maybe was, but it was fun experiential stuff.
It's interesting to see how the tide has turned against him since he's gone to live, because after he won at Kiowa, he was, you know, if not the most loved, one of the most beloved golfers of all time. I mean, it was, he was at an all-time high, and then it's like watching something evaporate. It's just gone.
Yeah, I think that continues to fascinate me. You know, how he will be treated at the Masters in a couple months, month and a half, will be fascinating. You know, the book on Phil literally was written by Alan Shipnuck, but it's still being decided, like how Phil will exist in the rest of his 50s. I think a big part of the reason why he joined LIV Golf at the time and as confidently as he could have was because he won that major championship, because he had guaranteed his status in the majors for the, you know, the 5 years that would follow. Another one of the very vivid things that I remember from my summer in St. Andrews was that day that we were talking about earlier with Tiger walking across the bridge. And Tiger will always pull headlines. He will always pull attention from media and fans. He exists in a different orbit than the rest of the golf world. And Phil Mickelson knows that better than anybody. But what was so vivid about that day to me is that Tiger did that, and Tiger hosted a press conference afterwards. And then like 2 hours go by and Phil Mickelson starts trudging up 18. And Phil had played a much better first round than Tiger. And I forget what his first round score was, but he was leaking oil on the back nine on Friday. And it was becoming clear that he would not make the cut. And so we have a guy who is, I think, 5 years older than Tiger, roughly, who, you know, in the hours after Tiger basically says, I don't know if I'll ever play an open here again. We should have been pitching those same questions to Phil Mickelson, but everything had changed that summer for Phil Mickelson. And so as a result of that, Phil's walk over the bridge is so different than Tiger's. It is quiet. There's only a smattering of people in the stands.
Yeah.
Links Place, the road that goes along the 18th hole at St. Andrews, it's people kind of like looking off to the side, like, oh, I guess, yeah, Phil's coming up. But like, you know, a couple hours earlier, you could not walk on that road because it was filled with people, standing room only for Tiger. And what was interesting, I guess, about that is I think I was one of the only kind of writers paying attention to that, which is a real rarity at major sporting events, major championships, because we all swim in the same direction often, and rarely can you have a story all to yourself. But somehow I did that day, which again speaks to Tiger's presence, but overall just kind of like how many people really cared about Phil in that moment. And it wasn't that many people. And maybe down the road we'll be able to ask Phil like about that. You know, his health and his life probably imply he'll get back to the old course at St. Andrews, but you never know. That could have been his last moment there too. And we'll find that out down the road.
Right. Well, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on was to talk about your book, and it's called Searching in St. Andrews. And it's about your summer in St. Andrews in 2022. And it'll be out April 2nd. I checked this morning. Mine's arriving on April 2nd somehow.
Yeah, that's good. Well, that's right on time.
What made you want to move to St. Andrews for that summer of 22?
That's the most natural question. I think what made me was that I was kind of looking around at where I was, and that would have been 8 years into a golf writing career at the same company. And I was blessed in so many ways to do a lot of really cool things, such as fasting with Phil Mickelson. And I was just wondering if like I wanted to stay in golf forever. Like I said, I worked at a club growing up. I wrote about the game, the first job and only job I've had since college. And I was just wondering, like, do I want to move on to something else? I felt a little I didn't have a ton of contentness with it all. And I was just essentially describing golf in America to me, which had become a little dry. It had become a bit stale, for lack of a better term. And that's not to say that all of golf in America is stale, but it is to say that it can be a bit samey, right? You go from Wisconsin to Illinois to Michigan to Minnesota, and a lot of the courses are going to be very much the same. And as you know very well, you can blow someone away by just bringing a golfer to the links land, and it will be golf of a completely different variety than what they are used to. It doesn't matter if you play, you know, links style courses in America, it is different over there.
Right.
And so I essentially was like, all right, if you really want to understand a life in golf and what that should look like, I think you need to go check it out elsewhere. And I was single, and I essentially just saw the Open, the 2022 Open, being this incredible crescendo for the game. And I was just like, I need to be there. I need to understand what an Open is like in St. Andrews. I need to understand what golf is like abroad. So I'm going to go for it. And I think that would tell me some answers about whether or not I want to stay in this game. So that's kind of the genesis of the idea. And then it either conveniently or unconveniently or inconveniently, like, became this topsy-turvy summer in the pro game, right? Where I land in Edinburgh, and like literally during my flight, LIV Golf had announced its opening field for its first event. And so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to be in St. Andrews very long. I'm going to have to go down to London and cover this thing. And so, you know, the summer in many ways in the pro game was defined by the emergence of LIV Golf, the battle with the PGA Tour. And that was something that I covered from the home of golf. And I think that juxtaposition made it a very interesting summer for me. But like any time that I ventured away from my computer, I was venturing out into maybe the best golfing place on earth.
Right.
And so that's what I mean by juxtaposition, is like I'm covering a very unsettled time in the game for my job, but I'm also existing in a historic, magnificent place for the game. And I think, you know, that that intersection, it was like, okay, this is truly the most fascinating sport to cover. Like the fact that it can be both recreational and professional and, you know, angsty, but also incredible. That's kind of what my summer was all about. And so it, like I said, I wasn't really sure that a book was going to be in front of me when I landed over there, but within a month I was like, gosh, this is a summer that we got to document in some way.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to read it. Now, you spent 3 months there. What were your feelings going there, and how have they changed about the town of St. Andrews?
Yeah, my feeling going there was that I really wanted to understand maybe the fuller area of Fife. I wanted St. Andrews to be my headquarters, to be my home base, and to understand what normal looks like over there, because the only other time I had been to St. Andrews came during the 2018 Open. I was staying up in Dundee, but that was at Carnoustie. And so I made a trip down to the old course. I played it for the first time. And that was kind of the extent of my experience with it. And so that day, what was so weird is that like the men's the senior open, I believe, was held at the old course that year. And so like Ernie Els was in town and Tom Watson was in town. And so it still didn't feel like normal. I wanted to really understand what normal was in St. Andrews, because at its core, it is a town of like 17,000 people. Sometimes it gets rounded up to 20,000 people, which is a small town. Doesn't care what country you're talking about. And I grew up in a small town. I grew up in a tourist trap, I guess, a tourist area. And yeah, I really wanted to understand, like, okay, the Dunvegan is very popular, right? It's one of the most amazing places to grab a golf beer. But like, what about the places around the corner and down the street? And what about the people that run the Dunvegan, or the golf shop in St. Andrews, or the people who run, you know, Forgan's, right? Probably one of the best restaurants in town.
Yeah.
Or the place next to Forgan's, right? That isn't, that's kind of more American style than anything. Like, how did they get there? And so I just think that if St. Andrews is the home of golf, which it is, there's just a fuller understanding of the economics of the game, of the people behind the game, that you can get when you spend time there, as I have done now, you have done yourself. There's more to understand about the place than just the first tee and the 18th green at the old course.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think as you're describing these places, I'm thinking right next to Forgan's is a place, the tail end for fish and mm-hmm. chips, right? And when you said the Dunvegan's full of Americans, but if you go up to the Criterion and get a cry pie or go to Janetta's, you're much less likely to run into Americans than than if you hang around. I'm not knocking the Dunvegan. I love that. I love the Jigger Inn, and but oh man, you're making my mouth water thinking about those things. But you were there, and you were there for the Open Championship, which was very special in St. Andrews. But you had some other things that made your time in Scotland special as well. If I'm not mistaken, you caddied in the Scottish Open, correct?
Yeah. That was that ended up maybe being the thing that told me, like, okay, you actually do have enough chapters to write a book, because I caddied for Joel Damon in the Scottish Open. Now, this was before Joel Damon was on a Netflix star. Yeah. This is when he was beloved on social media, but you know, I don't think he was as widely known at that point. And Joel's caddy, Gino, needed a break. I think they had played 6 weeks out of seven and they were not in the Open, and Joel was on his way to Italy for vacation. And so Gino lives in Idaho, which is a long way from East Lothian. And so I offered my services to Joel, who needed a caddy, and Joel took me up on it, and we had a hell of a time. And I think my best way of describing that week is that I learned why I am not Joel Damon's caddy and why Gino is Joel's caddy. Like, there are things that he does for Joel that you really would never know unless you put the bag on your own shoulders. And Joel's super generous, extremely kind, thinks I did a good job, but even he knows that there were some shortcomings that that me or anyone else filling in would have. And so, you know, I wrote a chapter about caddying for him, and then also hung out with him in North Berwick on the Saturday after we had missed the cut, because he was flying out on Monday. He was still hanging around in town. And I was introduced to North Berwick in a way that was perfect. And that I kind of call it like a sister city to St. Andrews, because
I agree. I was going to say it's the second best city for golf in Scotland, right? I agree with you. Yeah,
totally. And you can get there very easily from St. Andrews. It's, you know, that's when I said earlier, like, St. Andrews was going to be my headquarters. Like, that just allows you to go up to Carnoustie and allows you to go down to North Berwick. And it was too bad that like Joel missed the cut, because, you know, if you make the cut, then he's making money and I'm making more money. But what we got was like a pretty priceless Saturday, dreamy Saturday at North Berwick, and really enjoyed writing about that as well. So
you played there with him?
I actually just walked the course with him. I've played North Berwick a handful of times, I think 4 times now. And it is such a, I mean, like such a rollicking fun golf course. I did not play with him that day. He was playing with a couple caddies and Luke List. But you know, Luke List eventually made this run at Trevor Immelman's course record. So it was a very enjoyable afternoon just being a spectator.
Well, you got to walk in the ropes, and Joel Damon, besides being a media star now, or he got his 15 minutes of fame. He would best be described as a very truthful, honest journeyman. But he's also, you know, one of the top 150 golfers in the world. And I think people sometimes dismiss how good a golfer guys at his level are. Right. I mean, he's a hell of a golfer.
Well, that's the problem, is that Joel's like the first person to dismiss it. So that's what makes it a little hard to sometimes remember how good they actually are. But I've caddied for him on the tour now, and I've caddied for another guy named Martin Trainer. And even the difference between those two guys is pretty big. They've both won tournaments on the PGA Tour, but like, Martin's just definitely one step below the level of consistency that Joel has. And Joel was, you know, he was blessed with some God-given golfing ability. But what I really learned about him that week is just how much of a golfer's brain he possesses, the way he thinks about shots, the way the shots that I guess he possesses within his game are pretty, there's a lot of depth to them, which is something only golf nerds can understand. But I'm convinced that the next time he plays the Scottish Open that he will make the cut, in part because Gino will probably be caddying for him, but also because, like, you know, he hasn't played a ton of links golf, and you could just see him learning throughout the week what that means to hit certain shots. You know, it was a very breezy week at Renaissance Club, and Joel plays a shorter, but like lower trajectory game. And so it's generally great for a tournament like that and on courses like that. And so it was such a delight to, like you said, be inside the ropes. And like, there's a level even inside of being inside the ropes that caddying offers that it's a true education for people like us.
Well, hey, going back to St. Andrews, how many of the 7 courses in St. Andrews were you able to play?
That is actually one of the gaping holes within my existence there. Is I played the Old Course, played the New Course, played the Castle Course, the Eden, but I didn't get to like the Jubilee, which is like horrible. It's generally sad. But that gives me an opportunity to go whenever I'm back in town again. It quickly became a summer of like, oh gosh, I'm going to be here for 3 months and it is going to fly by before I even notice it. And so there's more for me to scratch when it comes back to St. Andrews, which is, I kind of like.
Yeah. Well, what surprised you about the other courses? I mean, the old, that you've played that several times now, but did anything surprise you about the other courses that you were able to play there?
You know, I think the Castle Course is so interesting to me because the other courses are so old, and this game is a game that is centuries old. And so when you look at the Castle Course being, I don't know, now, you know, maybe 2 decades old or something like that, it doesn't have the benefit of time. It doesn't have the benefit of like growing into like a proper links. It doesn't have the benefit of like maybe a renovation, or, you know, it doesn't have, it exists in the social media era in which people share opinions and share photos of everything. And you would have to wonder if the old course was created in 2005, if it would have stood up to a bunch of resistance in the way the Castle Course did. And so anyways, my way of saying that is like, I played it at a point at which it is now becoming, I think, a little bit more accepted.
Right,
There are
yeah.
some locals you will talk to that hate it, absolutely hate it, and think that it is a waste of space. It's a lovely property, and I think that maybe some of the greens can be a bit severe compared to the other properties in town, but the views that you can get out there and the potential, I think, means I think that course will be loved a lot more
Yeah.
every decade that goes by. 20 years from now, we might be considering that as like the second course you need to play in town.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think 17 may be one of the best par
Whew.
threes in Scotland. 18's an amazing par five. Nine that shares the double green with 18 is a great hole. I mean, there are a lot of great holes out there, but I agree. I think the course that surprised, well, not surprised me, but I found the most fun. For what it for its reputation anyway, was the Eden course. Because I know that residents like you and I were can just walk out there basically anytime, walk up and pay your 30 quid and play a perfectly fun round of golf. And it's not a championship caliber golf, but it is good fun and it's a tremendous value as well.
I mean, gosh, if you hit your driver well, or even just your 3 wood well, you're going to score
Yeah.
very well out there. And so that is, I guess, just an unheralded asset that the St. Andrews Links Trust makes a good use out of. But they're like, their crown jewel, the old course, is just sh it shines so brightly that
Yeah.
it's hard for people to appreciate, unless you spend a lot of time in town, just what surrounds it. And it's a good problem to have. It's a good
Well,
problem that Carnoustie
yeah.
exists, and that down the coast Crail exists, but it's tricky to get to all of them.
Well, what I tell people who say, "Well, I really want to play the old course." To me, those other courses, it's kind of like the paintings next to the Mona Lisa. There's two masterpieces on, one on either side, but name them. Name the art. I mean, all anyone does is stand in line to see the Mona Lisa, and then you turn around and you walk out of the room and you're missing something. I think, I always felt strongly that the second course at Ballybunion is a great course, and it kind of it gets lost by the luster of Ballybunion. And but yeah, so you mentioned Crail and Ely. How many did you get to play a number of courses in Fife that you enjoyed?
Yeah, Crail, both courses at Crail, Ely, obviously, Anstruther, which became just a beloved little snack for me. But like I said earlier, like there are still courses that I long to get to in that area. And what's unfortunate is like you do have to kind of spend 2 weeks there to hit them all. Like you have to be very purposeful with your time. And the truth is, like, I'm no different than some of the other people who visit for a smaller amount of time, where it's like, if I have a tea time at trying to think of like what a good example would be, like Panmure
Oh,
or
I love that.
someplace in the like lovely, lovely course, lovely place. But it's like, if suddenly like a dark time on the old course becomes available, it's like, gosh, it's gonna make it really hard time for me to leave town, right?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the lovely insights, I guess, that I learned is Americans can go for these short, hectic sprint around Fife stints, and that's what we're capable of doing. But there are so many courses next door that
Right.
are still proper firm turf links land that you might have your best day of your trip on one of those courses.
Absolutely.
And I think like Carnoustie might beat you up, but like if you play Panmure next door, like that might become your favorite course because of some of the shots that you hit out there, and it might
Yeah.
work for you that day.
We had two clients that we couldn't get on through the ballot at the Oak Course, so we got them on Panmure.
Yeah.
And I texted them afterwards and said, hey, how did you like it? And they said, thank God we didn't get on the Oak Course because we'd have had to have missed Panmure. And you know what they're talking about, right? Like, mm-hmm. the one guy had his best round on the trip. They played and they finished at dusk as the sun was setting. They were completely enthralled with the experience there.
Yeah, and that exists just in so many different places out there. And if you spend a summer, as you know, if you go in the summer, the sun, it like eventually makes it dark at like 11 p.m., the peak of summer.
Yeah.
I have too many photos on my phone of playing the 18th hole somewhere at 10:30 p.m.
Yeah.
And that's just something we're not used to in the States.
Yeah. Well, you were over there for 3 months. What's your favorite thing to do outside of golf in St. Andrews or in Fife?
Yeah. I would say some of my favorite days were Sundays on the Old Course, which is the days in which it's closed. And now a lot of people have kind of enjoyed it and like set up a picnic on the 18th, but it's just a fantastic course to run around. I did a lot of running and it's a perfect 4 mile loop to run out around the eighth tee at St. Andrews on the old. And to do that on a Sunday when there are dogs running all over the property, I'm a huge dog person. And so having left America and left a dog behind, I was like, I needed to get that in my life. And so that's why I always suggest people making St. Andrews their headquarters for their trip, because you can branch out from there. And let's say you played Carnoustie on a Sunday, you go back to St. Andrews that afternoon and you can just have a lovely coffee walk around the old while everyone else is doing the exact same thing. And so it's not exactly like a great answer, but like just running around town, running out up the Fife coastal path, which will take you all the way down to Crail. Like if you're a marathoner, you can see a lot of the North Sea that way.
Well, I would drop my girlfriend off at the Fairmont and she'd walk back all the way to her house in St. Andrews. It was amazing. I have another one for you. What's your favorite restaurant in St. Andrews?
Ooh, so that's a good question. I kind of think about the places in St. Andrews in the way I consumed them, which was like the same dish at different places that I just fell in love with. But I mean, Forgan's is a very popular one because of, I think the setting and the class of that restaurant, but next door to it on the other end, like you said, is Tail End on one side for fish and chips. But then on the other side is a bar called Mitchell, which I think has the best brunch in town. So I had a lot of brunches at Mitchell. I had, a lot of bacon rolls at this place called Munch on South Street. Which is kind of like a window. You show up to the window and they'll hand you a couple bacon rolls through the window. I believe the coffee shop is called Taste.
Oh, I love that place. Yeah.
North. That became one of my favorite places to work because it's this tiny little, like very college oriented coffee shop that has good coffee and, I mean, it's tiny. It is as big as the kitchen that I'm sitting in right now. And that's not to say that's big. It's definitely small. So I think all these little places that have a lot of heart to them, and you can tell that they are places that the locals beloved. Like we said earlier, the Dunvegan is great. And, you know, the rooftop at the Rue 6 is great. But you're gonna hear a lot of American voices.
Yeah.
You're going to hear a lot of American accents in there. And that's not to say that that's bad. But you know that if you go elsewhere, you'll find where the locals really go to.
Yeah, I our favorite spot is Little Italy.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I mean, we love that. I think, but it's hard to go wrong in town. I mean, there's so many choices. The Cry Pie at the Criterion is great. You know, out at the Fairmont, I don't know if you ever went out there, but their clubhouse has a very nice restaurant. with amazing views. That was fun, but what do you think most Americans who visit St. Andrews miss while they're there?
Well, unfortunately, most Americans probably miss like old Tom's grave because it's often behind a locked gate these days. During the open week in 2022, they opened it, which was great. But I think that I think the Fife Coastal Walk is one thing that then people can sleep on because, like I said, it just rips up and down the coast and you'll find yourself on a different golf course being like, oh, that's the same path. I think people miss it because, if you walk to the cemetery, you kind of look out and you're like, well, do I want to keep walking out of town? But it is just so lovely that you can continue on it. I think, what else do they miss about St. Andrews? I know this sounds repetitive, but I think the pursuit of going to the places that everyone's gone to, like you can find yourself not going to the one under bar, even though it's on the 18th along the 18th fairway, like there'll be three or four bars that you might step in before then.
Right.
What I think one thing I really like though is what I found is it didn't take me long to meet someone who was a member of the new club, right? Or St. Andrews Golf Club and or the ladies club. And it did, like meeting those people always comes with an offering of like, hey, do you want to stop by the club before we play for a pint? Or you want to stop in afterward and get a pint? Like there is such a welcoming, sharing, generous nature that is, if it's not necessarily like, hey, I'm going to get you out to play with me, it's let's enjoy some corner of golf. Let's sit in the bay windows at the new club and watch people play up the 18th.
Right.
Because that in itself comes with a little bit of exclusivity, but if you spend enough time in town, someone will invite you to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just a pretty special experience.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I've been in both of the clubs that you mentioned with friends that I met while I was there, and it's very special. And they're not that exclusive. It's just
no.
They're kind of anyone in town could join one of them. You don't have to be a doctor, a lawyer. It seems like you have to do that here to join a club. But what did you learn about yourself living in St. Andrews? I mean, you were there alone and you know.
Yeah. What did I learn about myself? On one hand, living alone taught me that I really, really love doing things with other people, which is like, you know, how a lot of us are. But I just learned how much socializing I need in my life.
Yeah.
And how I think golf is a sport that offers that to you in ways that you won't expect it, or maybe ways you would expect it but can't prepare for it. Like people that find they have a fourth in their foursome that's free. And I think in times growing up, I've been like, I don't want to play golf with strangers. But every time I do, or 99% of the times I do, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's one of the true benefits of this game is that we're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to make a par, right? And it comes to differing levels of difficulty for all of us. But that plight, that golfer's plight, gives us so many opportunities to meet other people and to see versions of ourselves in other people and to see things that are different than ourselves. And so I think what I really learned is like, my gut might tell me, no, Sean, like you kind of just want to be by yourself today. But every time that I do say yes to golf with strangers, it is truly always memorable. You know, it's more memorable than when you play golf with your buddies,
right?
You remember these individuals. And that's what I think I wrote into the book a few times is just like, Oh no, meeting that guy at that course has stuck with me. I remember his first name, his last name, his handicap, the shot that he hit into 12.
Yeah.
That is just such, it's something that I really get a lot of enjoyment out of. That summer really forced upon me.
Well, yeah, I agree 100%. I've met some amazing people playing St. Andrews, and I remember all of them like you do. It's just a very special place to play. But if you, as you look back on the courses that you've played in Scotland, and you've mentioned more than a handful, what would be the favorite, your favorite course in Scotland?
Oh, that's a na another natural question. The one that I have the most fun playing is undoubtedly North Berwick. I think, with all due respect to the old course, it's kind of like, I mean, it's eminently scoreable as well. It offers a ton of places to get, the one birdie that you made in the old course or four birdies that you make. But North Berwick, man, it just, I feel like that's a course I could play every single day and with different people, and I will find something different about it. The best course, I think, would be between the old course and Muirfield. I was able to play Muirfield, and I didn't play it on a Muirfield day, which is to say I did not play it in a foursomes match. I played it on my own ball, which is kind of rare for a guest. But that place is, I played it 2 days after the Women's Open ended, I think. And yeah, it was the Tuesday after the Women's Open. And so I had spent the week covering the Women's Open, watching Nelly Korda, Ashley Buhai win, and played it essentially in open conditions a couple of days later. And that course is, the routing is insane. You understand what it means to have a different wind on every shot. And I played really well, of course. And so whenever we play well, these shots, the scores and everything always make more feeling,
Well, Sean, the
add
big
more feeling
question
to
is,
it.
did you have the lunch?
I did have the lunch. Yeah, of course. So that also adds to the occasion. And yeah, I think that was another thing that stuck with me, is I did not rent a car all summer long, and I was able to take a train down to Muirfield and then take a train back. And so, like, my Muirfield day was playing one of the best courses in the world in, at that point, championship conditions. I had my clubs on my back through the train station. I was working on the way there and working on the way home. Had a really full day, had the lunch, shot a good score, and it's like, I don't even know if I need to go back now. It was like, we won't ruin that memory because it was pretty perfect.
Well, you mentioned two courses that you love, Muirfield and North Berwick, but they couldn't be more starkly different. The formality of Muirfield, you've got to show up in a jacket and tie, and you've got to eat in a jacket and tie. And then North Berwick is just, for lack of a better term, come as you are. It's a very friendly, it's not that Muirfield's not friendly, but it's a lot more formal than North Berwick. So,
Yeah, it's true. It's funny. I need to write about this summer when the pros go back over there, because I was also there in the summer of 2023. I was not caddying at Renaissance, but I found myself having dinner with a pro at the Marine and Lawn Hotel, which overlooks the 16th hole at North Berwick. And that night, as I was like getting ready to leave the hotel, which is a fantastic restaurant in that hotel, my goodness, I was getting ready to leave, and we ended up having a conversation, short conversation, with Ian Baker Finch and then Trevor Immelman, like these two major champions who are now in the broadcasting space, are used to sharing their opinions. They had a little mini debate about which course was more enjoyable, like which course they preferred. And Ian Baker Finch chose Muirfield, and then Trevor chose North Berwick. And now Trevor, he owns the course record at North Berwick, so like maybe that's why. But to hear their differences in what they see, and two, like you said, very different vibes, two links courses that ask different things. One literally hosts the best players in the world, and the other, like, it hosts the qualifier for the Women's Open, but it would not host the best players in the world,
right?
Unless they're out there going for, you know, a round of their own for fun, which they will do during Scottish Open week. It's just, it kind of paints a perfect picture of what golf can look like to different people at different levels and still be great on both ends.
You know, it's something you mentioned, Katrina Matthews earlier. Her husband's a caddy there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. They live right by the 18th tee. And I think, he doesn't need to caddy, you know, she has made plenty of money. They have made plenty of money. They have a lovely house. But that just goes to show, like, golf is so embedded within that community, within Scottish people, that of course I'm just going to continue caddying. I love, you know, what exists beyond my front yard, which is one of the best golf courses on the planet. Why would I not enjoy it by walking around it with a stranger, right? And so I think his name is Graham. But Graham, I believe, he just kind of caddies and really enjoys walking the course with probably a lot of Americans that are visiting.
Right.
And sharing his intellect, sharing his golf knowledge. And gosh, like, it's people like that that make the visiting golf experience for Americans. Like,
so
it makes people like yourself be able to go back year after year after year with, like, no, I'm going to go next year again because it was different this year than last.
Exactly. Last question for you today. So for someone visiting St. Andrews for the first time, what advice would you give them?
So, I said it a couple times, but I think using it as your headquarters, I guess I know that you plan trips for people and that sometimes those trips are like really roving throughout the country, but you can spend a good bit of time in St. Andrews and still go to Carnoustie, go down to East Lothian, go to Crail or King's Barnes. Like, you can spend 4 or 5 nights there without feeling like you've got it all. And so I think my advice would be, like, if you can, you know, work with someone like yourself who can help people get access to these places, but don't be afraid to treat St. Andrews like a place where you can spend numerous nights. And you know, another piece of advice, like you said, of course, I guess the benefit of doing that is you can put your name in for the ballot every single day, right? If it's your home base, you're probably going to be able to get on it through multiple attempts at the ballot. And if it doesn't work out for you, hey, just walk up to the first tee at the new course and you'll probably find a time there.
Yeah.
And if that somehow doesn't work out, you can walk to the Eden and do, you know, I think that's advice that
You keep skipping Jubilee.
You're right. I do. And that's my own shortcoming, but that's something that someone from St. Andrews would tell you is, like, look, you'll probably get out to the old course at some point. And of course you want to play Carnoustie and you want to play King's Barnes, but don't be afraid if you strike out on the ballot on day number 4 to be like, let's enjoy brunch in town and let's walk over to the new course and have an evening over there, because you're going to get the same sunset. You're going to get a really good golf course and you're going to have no wait essentially while you play.
Yeah. That's fantastic advice. Well, hey, as we wrap up, I want people to know, where can they find you and how can they pre-order your book?
Yeah, well, the answer to that is just the book's name is Searching in St. Andrews. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Target, places that people would buy books. And then me, on social media, I'm just my first name and then underscore my last name. So Sean underscore Z-A-K. And hopefully I got to come up with a couple different ways to kind of promote this book over the next month or two, which means like sharing little bits and pieces of it. And I think I should have some excerpts coming out soon enough that kind of give some flavor of it. But I appreciate you letting me talk about it a lot today, which is, it's been enjoyable. Like I said, at the jump, like, even though I spent a long time, 90,000 plus words writing about it, and I have a hard drive full of photos and videos of it, like, it still exists kind of in your imagination, in your memory. And every time that you go back to those sections of your brain with someone like yourself who's lived a similar experience, man, it just makes me smile because I kind of knew what I was getting into, but it still lived up to the hype. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Well, I'll tell you what, we wish you all the success with the book. I literally can't wait to read it because think we, as you said, we've got some common experiences, but there are also different experiences I had and that you had that I'll enjoy reading about. So Sean, best of luck.
You're squarely in the target audience.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I think we've got, this will go out to an awful lot of people. And then we've got a newsletter that goes out to an awful lot of people. I'll put a link in there so people can pre-order your book or order the book when that goes out. But again, thank you so much for investing your time with us. It was a great pleasure getting to know you.
You got it. I've thought too much about St. Andrews lately, and it was nice to see that you've got it as your background on your on your Zoom image right now. It kind of put me in the right mental space to do this too.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Oh, I hope to talk to you again soon. Take care.
You got it.
Thank you for listening. Thank you again to Sean Zach for coming on as well. Pre-order his book, Searching in St. Andrews. If you enjoyed this video, if you want to keep up to date on all that's happening in golf in Scotland, please subscribe to our channel, like this video, share it, and we'll see you next time.